Breaking news, friends and neighbors, as we begin today's episode, recording on April 30th, 2018, there are 7.583158523 people alive on the planet. That's a little over 7.5 billion. Hi, I'm Ben.
Can you break that down to one of those fancy math numbers where it's like something to the something?
I could. Yeah, I could.
Are you good? Are you mathy like that, Ben?
You know, I've been known to dabble. I don't have a personal passion for it.
No.
Yeah, what about you, Noel?
Were your SAT scores pretty balanced between English and math?
Higher in English.
Mine were way higher in English, way out of whack with the maths. So I may have to lean on you for math support in this episode. Hi, my name's Noel.
So out of 7.5 billion people, you have chosen to tune into a podcast featuring three of those people. Just a measly three out of billions. We are so glad you're here. But wait, Ben, but wait, Noel, you might be saying, who is this mysterious third person you're talking about? Why, it's our super producer, Casey Smooth Jazz Pegram.
Oh, man, I like that new smooth jazz Casey sound effect.
We did not run this by Casey beforehand.
He's making a face. Is he making a face?
Is it a pleasurable face?
I'm into it.
Cool.
Oh. All right. And that's been Casey on the case.
It has been. So now that we've established that we're going to be talking about large numbers of humans, why don't we take a step back and let's kind of like couch that with a historical topic.
Right. Yes. Let's dare I say,
let's
make
give
it
the people what they want.
A story about ridiculous history. So we'll come back to that number that is ticking as we record from something called theworldcounts.com, where you can find things like world population clocks.
Is that the same as the doomsday clock?
It's thankfully not. No, okay. It's different.
Okay.
But for some people who consider our society at large on the verge of collapse, then yes, it's a different doomsday clock. But we will return to that in a very important way. Today, we'd like to set the scene for everyone in the U.S. and abroad by saying that there's something quirky about the United States, despite the fact that it is a representative democracy. Mm. Several of our presidents, our commanders-in-chief, and several other people in high positions of power, like the Supreme Court, for instance, or senators and so on, they tend to be related, not all the time.
And of course, most of you are surely aware of the big-name political dynasties like the Bushes or the Kennedys. But how about the Roosevelts?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah, the Roosevelts. For many people, FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, remains an incredibly popular or controversial figure. Not everybody likes him, even in the modern day.
Wasn't he a populist?
Yes, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was the mastermind in many ways behind what is known as the New Deal, which had a lot of, was, shall we say, left-leaning programs at the time.
Well, sure. And it also provided a lot of people jobs when they were in desperate need of said jobs in order to help build up our infrastructure, everything from roads and bridges to things like, what else?
The TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority, that's a huge one. There were folkways, collection programs, there any number of things, a lot of infrastructure that was direly needed. He served as the 32nd president of the United States from 1933 until his death in 1945. However, you may be saying, what about that other Roosevelt?
Teddy Bear?
Yes, Theodore Roosevelt.
Teddy Ruxpin Roosevelt.
Yes, yep. This is the 26th president of the United States, and oddly enough, yes, the teddy bear is named in his honor.
Wasn't he the one who carried a big stick?
And spoke softly?
Yeah.
Yes, that is the quote you'll hear about him. Yeah, he was president for 8 years from 1901 to 1909. So, like many people, you would assume that he and Franklin were related pretty closely, right?
You know, and it's funny. Yes, I would assume that, Ben. In fact, I did assume that, because it's the kind of thing you just take at face value. You got your Kennedys. You got your Bushes. Why can't you have your Roosevelts?
Sure.
And you can, but not in the way you might think.
No, it turns out. So one of the assumptions would have been that perhaps Theodore, we'll call him Roosevelt the Elder, was the father of Franklin Roosevelt, or maybe an uncle or something like that.
Right, because ruled. they governed like 30 years apart.
Yeah, decades. And it's not the case, although the math might seem to roughly check out. It is not the case that they are father, son, or uncle, nephew at all. They are related, but in a much more distant way.
In a much more distant way that sort of shimmies us on to the next chapter that we're going to get into. But it's interesting. They're related in two different ways.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they shared a great-great-great-great-grandfather.
So that's four greats.
Four greats, making them fifth cousins.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Did I get that right?
Yeah. And so the question there is, just to spend some time on this first relationship, the question there, when we get to the fifth cousinry of this, is a question for you, folks. Are you in regular contact? Be honest now. Are you in regular contact with your fifth cousins? Even one? Can you name one of your fifth cousins?
May I speak for the group?
Speak for yourself, please. Yeah.
I will speak for myself, but I choose to speak with the voice of the people in saying no.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, I myself am not super close with my fifth cousins.
You got a fifthy? You know him, though?
I know of them.
Really?
Yeah, Tennessee's a weird place, man.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I think if we're hanging out, it would just be at the big events, you know, collapse of civilization,
yeah.
Somebody's birthday or death, something
wow.
like that.
I would have thought those would have been reversed. I thought collapse would have come more of a last resort, but...
That's the one where I think we're most likely.
Is that how you do it?
I'm telling you, man.
Yeah, well, speaking of strange bedfellows, no, mm-hmm. that's, well, okay, sure, I'll go with that. That's
go
fine.
With it.
I'm
yeah,
gonna
yeah.
stick with it.
Yeah.
The other way they were related mm-hmm. is that FDR's wife, Eleanor, and it's funny, I actually always used to think that Franklin's middle name was Delaner,
mm-hmm.
and it was weird to me that his wife's name was Eleanor.
That was Delaner and Eleanor,
but no, it's Delano and Eleanor.
Yes.
She, in fact, was... Teddy's niece, direct
right.
niece,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, that is correct.
Which is confusing because her last name is Roosevelt without Franklin, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yet his last name was Roosevelt and they married. She didn't have to change her last name.
Right.
Did I get that right?
Yeah.
That's weird. That's why this is all very flummoxing.
And this also means that FDR and Eleanor, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Eleanor Roosevelt were fifth cousins themselves once removed.
Both fifth cousins.
Five by five in it.
Wow.
Right.
It's literally the same relationship.
Right. It sounds strange, and this may have some of us wondering, are we going to jump the shark here? Is this going to be an episode about unknown incest in the U.S. presidency bordering on that of the Egyptian royalty?
Jump the history shark.
We just might. But the fact remains that this was not a strange, untoward, or in any way ethically questionable relationship.
No, man, it's fifth.
It's fifth. It's fifth.
Fifth is fine.
It's fine if it's fifth.
Yes.
Okay, so that's it. That's the show, folks. They're just not as related as we thought.
Yeah, we kind of thought that ourselves where we were like, this is a show?
Is this the whole show?
But you know what? Sometimes finding a little quirky fact like this can open up a whole field of rabbit holes full of quirky facts.
Right. A panoply, if you will. We asked ourselves, what other strange genealogical secrets does the U.S. presidency hold as an office, right? And that's when we ran into a crazy question. Are all U.S. presidents related?
Whoa.
I think we both just assumed no.
Yeah, it seems like a long walk to get to that question from our FDR and Teddy Roosevelt related to are all presidents related. But as it turns out, we're not the only ones asking this question, Ben. You're not the only ones asking this question.
Right.
You know who else was asking this question?
Yes.
12-year-olds.
Yep, 12-year-olds. Specifically, a budding genealogist by the name of Brigitte d'Avignon.
Amazing name.
That's an amazing name. So she was 12 years old back in 2012, mm-hmm. and then she came out with a family tree that had some earth-shaking implications, right?
Yeah, man. It seems like she scooped, like, the genealogy community at large with this one. 12-year-old Bridgeanne Davignon, who is a resident of Salinas, California, for a school project, get this, created a family tree that connected 42 of the 43 at the time U.S. presidents to a single common ancestor, a real jerkwad by the name of King John of England, or John Lackland, as his pappy called him.
Yes, famously named that for signing the Magna Carta in 1215, which limited his power as a monarch and led to the formation of what we recognize as the modern British government.
Yeah, in fact, John had such a horrible reputation for cruelty and incompetence that he was kind of strong-armed into signing that fateful document by these rebelling barons who had had enough of his shenanigans, and essentially it limited his power, it lost him a whole lot of land, and basically kind of neutered the monarchy for all intents and purposes from that point on.
What we're saying is that Lackland was not a compliment. It wasn't ironic either.
No, and he was famously portrayed as the villain in the Robin Hood stories because of his, you know, just notorious greed and cowardice.
Mm-hmm. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, by the way. That's the one we're referring to, I assume, in the 90s.
I was thinking more of the Disney one where he's like a skinny lion.
Oh, yeah.
And he's always sucking his thumb.
He's sort of a proto-Scar.
Yeah.
We should do an entire show on Robin Hood in the future because the facts don't really resemble the fiction, which may surprise some people, maybe startle some people, but it's worth it. Well, we will say that he was a human being and not a anthropomorphic fox.
No, or a lion, thumb-sucking lion. But no, here's the thing. This young lady in mm-hmm. California came up with this project from, I think she was originally trying to trace her own ancestry, and then somewhere along the way kind of decided that she wanted to go way, way, way deeper in the form of scouring over 500,000 names to find what she termed the presidential Adam. And her grandfather was actually sort of an amateur genealogist himself, and he helped her out. Here's the thing, though. What she did that everyone before her, all of the people in the professional genealogy community had not done, was she looked at both male and female family lines to make this connection.
Right.
And the only president that did not tie back to King John was Martin Van Buren, and that's because he hailed from Dutch roots.
Right. And this is, again, this is according to her findings with the help of her armchair genealogist grandfather. One thing we can say, heck of a science project, probably the best one of the year there at Monte Vista Christian School in Watsonville. But she also found out that she is the 18th cousin of President Barack Obama. She wrote to President Obama to share her findings. And as of 2012, she said she received a form letter from the White House. But, you know, maybe she got a handwritten one later because it's 2018.
That's a kick in the pants, though. No, I have followed up and I haven't found any new information about this.
No.
She also apparently was trying to raise money for the trip by selling signed copies of her massive sort of vision board-esque family tree with Barack Obama's head center in the middle. U.S. President Barack Obama, world leader, surrounded mm-hmm. by his cousins with thousands of names.
So this leads to a question that we all have to ask. We have to be skeptical. We can't be instantly taken in by a snappy headline. And, you know, we were talking about this off air when I had brought up some of this stuff. And the question was, are we crushing the dreams of a child if we say that it isn't true? Luckily, it turns out it is kind of true, this idea of a web of relationships. But like the relationship between Franklin Roosevelt and Theodore Roosevelt, it's not true in the way you might think.
It's not particularly remarkable either.
No, it is not.
Yeah, John was just not friends with anybody. He was constantly feuding with the papacy, quarrels over the election to the See of Canterbury after the death of Hubert Walter. Pope Innocent III decided that John's nominee was no good and instead elected Stephen Langton. And this infuriated John, and they just really were not very close. Here's the thing, too. King John, in addition to being cruel, he was known for starving his enemies to death. In fact, in an article from the BBC entitled The Lost Jewels of Bad King John, historian Mark Morris, who wrote a biography on the king, was asked if he was really as bad in reality as he was made out to be in songs and stories and, you know, Robin Hood, for example, to which he replied, no, much worse. In legend, he doesn't starve people to death. In reality, he does en masse. So a bad guy and also incompetent. Apparently, he was traveling his, what do you call it, like a litter? Like when you're in those...
A palanquin?
Yeah, sure. Like a, you know.
Is it where somebody's carrying them aloft, or are they pulling them along the ground?
Yeah, more of a carriage kind of situation.
Okay.
Yeah, and they had all of these boxes of various supplies and treasure, and they sunk into a marsh known as the Wash. It's a very treacherous, muddy bank under the Cross Key Bridge in Lincolnshire, England, and it was all lost. He apparently lost the crown jewels because of this foolish rout when he was actually running away from his enemies at the time. So all around, pretty bad guy.
Or as Mark Morris would say, an absolute rotter. He also, Morris himself wrote an article for The Telegraph where he says this is the most evil monarch in British history and calls him a lecherous traitor, a depraved tyrant, and a hopeless leader. He was also a serial rapist.
Yeah.
Just putting that in there. His enemies were not necessarily some sort of spoiled tyrants yearning for more power. They were saying, we gotta get rid of this guy because he is such a pill.
Yeah, big time. And I believe he had a brother who was known as Richard the Lionheart. That actually comes into play in the Robin Hood story where good King Richard comes back to depose, you know, King John. But anyway, the thing with the lost treasure is interesting because it's actually become kind of this like Dan Brown-esque sort of mystery of the secret treasure of Prince John, where in that area in England, there are several folks who have been trying to find it over the years with no success. One guy, in fact, claims that he can see the outline of it on a Google Earth image. So not exactly the most flattering guy for all of these presidents to be connected to. The young lady who did the project, her comment to a local news organization was, they all have the common trait of wanting power. So there's that.
So folks, here we have a question for you, since we're all learning a lot about each other's families today. How many ancestors do you have? Well, if we're saying living your dead, just any ancestors, doesn't matter if you talk to them or not, doesn't matter how long ago they lived, we would see some pretty easy math at first. You have two parents. They each have two parents, right? So you have two parents, four grandparents. Each of your grandparents have two parents. So then you have eight great-grandparents, four grandparents, two parents, and then you. And so when we realize that this exponential growth as you go back in time through the generations applies to every single one of the 7.5 billion plus people living on the planet, you start to run into something weird. And the math doesn't check out after a certain amount of time.
That's right, because when you look back and trace your theoretical ancestors in the way that you're talking about, you start to actually outpace the population. In an article for Abroad in the Yard called The U.S. Presidents Who Descend from King John of England and Why You Probably Do Too, Lee Renner writes that if you go back 30 generations to the Middle Ages, you would theoretically have over 1 billion ancestors in that line of your family tree.
Yeah, and furthermore, if you continue down the line with this sort of growth, then it will double every step, and that means that just 40 generations ago, we would find that every person alive now has a trillion ancestors all living at the same time, which is impossible because Earth has never had that many people living on it.
So how does this work out, Ben? Help us out with the birthday math here. That's what I like to call this kind of math.
So this leads us to the concept of pedigree collapse, or as it's known in German, Ahnenschwund.
Ooh, what does that translate to?
Loss of lineage, roughly.
Oh.
Coined by a guy named Robert C. Gunderson. Here's the gist. Without pedigree collapse, the family trees we just described for you, for Casey, for myself, for Noel, they all work the same way. They're binary. We've got you, the protagonist of the family tree, of course, your parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, and so on. Because this grows eventually to exceed the total world population at the time, if not ever, we know that the family tree at some point has to be incorrect, this binary tree model. And this apparent paradox is explained by a couple of things, mainly shared ancestors, because a binary tree would assume that all of the people in all these trees are unique in some way. Instead of a tree consisting of all different individuals, a tree can have multiple places occupied by a single individual. Parents of an ancestor might be related to each other, not knowing that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
The offspring of two first cousins has at most, for example, only six great-grandparents instead of eight. And then this means that the family tree you have, the binary tree, looks a lot like an upside-down pyramid, but the real shape of it is more like a diamond.
Oh, cool.
And everyone we know has some sort of common ancestor.
It's true, and apparently it would only take about 2,000 to 3,000 years going back to find a period where that was the case, where we all shared this common ancestor.
And we have no idea who it is.
Of course not, yeah. And the thing, too, is when you start getting into royal lineages, that really muddies the water, doesn't it? Because there is, intentional inbreeding that happens in order to maintain the family bloodline or maintain, transfer of ownership of property within, a particular house, I guess, and also just the lack of mating options within that echelon of society, right?
Right. And we also have an added benefit here in the case of many aristocratic royal bloodlines or genealogies. We have much more robust documentation of what happened when and who was born to whom, other than the commoners. So another interesting aside here is not only do we have a shared common ancestor 2,000 to 3,000 years ago, but at various points in early human history, we experienced an evolutionary bottleneck where there was a very small amount of human beings in general alive. A lot of our regional populations across the planet now are still descended from just a few people, relatively. We can find a common link. And in the case of the United Kingdom, or what we call the United Kingdom today, those common links are surprisingly easy to find.
Yeah, it's true. Andrew Miller of the University of Durham in England figured out that most anybody with Anglo-Saxon ancestry is likely to have descended from King Edward III, who ruled from 1312 to 1377. And when I say most anybody, I mean that probability is close to 100%, 99.997.
Mm-hmm.
And that Edward III has around 100 million descendants in the British Isles, Europe, the former British colonies, which of course includes the United States and Canada and also Australia.
So we see that more people have more ancestors in common than we might have thought. Are we all playing some weird family-themed version of 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon? The answer is kind of yes, but it's more with everyone you know. Writing in Family Tree magazine with the article, What is Pedigree Collapse?, author Diane Haddad, and I think that's a cool last name, says that a Rutgers University professor estimates 80% of historical marriages took place between second or first cousins. To Noel's earlier point, the idea of preserving not just the bloodline, but resources, property, inheritable goods applied to the common folk as well as the aristocrats. And it may just have been a matter of people available, people you know. Folks didn't travel as widely as they do now.
Oh, totally.
And so this leads us to a another question. If it does indeed turn out that all human beings are in some way related, then does that mean that Miss D'Avignon was correct? Are all U.S. presidents related? Well, yeah, sorta, kinda. But we do have one fun fact about, I believe it was Franklin Roosevelt. Isn't that right, Noel?
Yeah, so while that fifth degree connection between FDR and Teddy Roosevelt is probably the most obvious surfacey one with them sharing that pretty memorable last name, with the assumption of some sort of political dynasty that, spoiler alert, no, it's not really a spoiler at this point, is not a thing, FDR was actually related to quite a few other presidents, including our odd man out of the whole King John debacle, President Martin Van Buren. Third cousins, twice removed to Teddy Roosevelt. How does that even work? I don't understand. Like, if Van Buren wasn't connected to King John, then how could he be third cousins to FDR? It makes my head spin, Ben.
Right. Yeah, it's surprising. In addition, that list, the other presidents would include John Adams, James Madison, John Quincy Adams, Buren, as you mentioned earlier, Noel, William Henry Harrison, Zachary Taylor, the guy with the arsenic conspiracy theory about his death, Andrew Johnson, Ulysses S. Grant, Benjamin Harrison, Willie Taft, and of course, last but certainly not least, Teddy himself, Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah, I think it's a total of 11 U.S. presidents, either by blood or by marriage.
Mm-hmm. And now this leads to a question that we would love to close on with you. The question you may have is, well, how many people am I related to? Am I really related to everyone, guys? Am I related to you, Casey, Ben, and Noel? The answer is yes, distantly. Some geneticists estimate that we are all 7.5 billion plus of us, are at least 50th cousins.
Well, we're all made of star stuff, Ben.
That's true. And is this bad for us genetically? No, not really. It's surprising, and I think it's a little bit inspiring because there are so many people in the world that it can feel like a disconnected, lonely place at times, but everywhere you go, in some way, you're hanging out with your family.
Hey, man, if fifth is fine, 50th is definitely fine.
Right? That's true. And as we close today, the number for the world's population, to show how much it has increased, is 7,583,165,899 billion people. By 2025, our global family will be over 8 billion people. And who knows where our ridiculous history family will be, but we want to thank you so much for checking out the show.
Thanks for bearing with us on this one. This was a fun one, but it was a little circuitous, but I enjoyed it very much, Ben. How about you?
Yeah, likewise. We can only hope that Casey enjoyed it or at least tolerated us.
He's making a face.
He's making hopefully the face of a saint. Any face he makes.
It's the face of love. It's literally looking into the face of goodness and love.
Yes. And in addition to thanking Casey, we'd of course like to thank you. We'd like to thank Alex Williams, who composed our track.
That's true. We would like to thank Mark Zuckerberg for inventing Facebook, where you can find us at Ridiculous History. We also have a pretty cool little Facebook group called the Ridiculous Historians. If you want to be a member, you can do that. And there's some really fun conversations. And we're looking to mine some of the suggestions there for future episodes. And you can see little Ben, dressed up as a cowboy at Opryland as a child. And you can see me doing a karaoke song. That's just the kind of fun shenanigans we get up to at the Ridiculous Historians. Also, do us a solid. Leave us a review on iTunes where you gush. Just gush, if you don't mind. That would really be cool and help us out a whole lot.
You can also check us out on Instagram. You can check us out on Twitter, where we are Ridiculous History or some variation thereof. And be sure to join us for our next episode when we explore the capture of Guam, which was relatively bloodless, cartoonishly fast, and all due to a wild misunderstanding. So tune in. In the meantime, of course, if social media is not your thing, we want to hear from you. I mean, we're practically family now. You can write to us directly. We are ridiculous@howstuffworks.com. Hey, Noel, it's the end of this. Do you want to just go out on a sing-along?
Let's do it.
Okay.
We are family. And a bit of body and sing. Oh, you know the words. I don't know. We are family. 50th family. Oh, God. Oh. Is it over?
It's over.
Let's make it over.
It's over.